supervisors will come out of closed session. Council, would you report out on the first session?
Yes, the board went into closed session at 9:03 a.m. and came out of closed session at 9:33 a.m. for items 4C and 4D. There was no reportable action taken, and the balance of the closed session agenda will be taken up at the end of the board meeting.
Thank you. All right. We are at item 6, presentations from the public. This time slot is for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You'll be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. I have no blue cards here. Anyone online?
Showing none online.
And seeing no one online. Give it a minute in case somebody can't figure out how to push the right button. Nothing?
Showing
okay.
None.
We'll go to the consent agenda. I'd like to pull item 7L.
L is in Larry?
Yes.
Great.
There's nothing else. I'm looking for a motion to approve the balance of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All righty. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren? And Supervisor Cobson?
Aye. Item L. So a couple things. One, I need to know where Exhibit A is. It's not included in this packet. And because it wasn't publicized publicly, I don't know that we could do anything.
Exhibit B.
The contract has services described in Exhibit A, 3.01.
I believe it's 3. Yeah, it's number 3. On the agenda of our exhibits. The first one would be the agenda, the second one would be the contract.
There should be something labeled Exhibit A.
It is at the top in red under proposal for Siskiyou County. It says Exhibit A.
Yeah. You just can't.
So
you got a black and white card.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Okay. So. Where are the services then? This is a proposal, I understand that, but it's giving background to the contractor.
That's their scope of work. My name's Emily Harper. I'm project coordinator with General Services.
Thank you.
Okay.
New to the position, am I now?
Yes. I am.
Sorry.
Here you go.
That's okay.
Here you go. I don't want you to feel like you've been thrown to the wolves. So
that's all right.
So
that is their scope of work, and it does have the services that they intend to do.
Do you have, can I borrow your copy? Page 4.
It's just not a usual laid out
right.
Exhibit A that I've seen in the past. It's more of a...
We did this through a RFA or a RFP process.
Yes.
And so this was their proposal to us. So this is what we attached with the contract.
And council, are you satisfied with the scope of services that are in this?
This has gone through a county council review. I assume Dana Barton would have looked at it. I do see, looking at the budget summary, it has a list of 8 tasks. If the board would like further description of those tasks.
The tasks start on page 29.
Yeah, I'm there. So this is for edible food recovery compliance. Is that what this grant is for?
Part of it, and also organic waste.
So we're exempt from organic waste until 2037.
We are, but we also need to look at how we're going to get there.
I don't want to look at it. we've made it clear that we don't want to go there, and there's the potential that SB 1383 is going to have a permanent exemption. for counties like us future.
And that's
possible. I don't want to be spending money that on something that's going to create a bureaucracy for its future that we don't want.
Right. But this does have organic, or not organic waste, sorry. This does have food recovery and those types of efforts in it as well. And that is what our focus is right now. We have a grant currently that runs out in March of 26. So we are trying to use that money to see what's feasible in our county to move food around and see how we can get it to the public the best
way. How's it working so far?
Minimally. A lot of our food comes through commodities and through donations from the public. We want to get the big generators, such as the grocery stores.
I thought that's the only ones.
Restaurants.
That were, yeah. I thought those were the only ones that it applied to currently. I thought we had three. Is that correct in the county? That
is correct. But there's more generators out there that we could utilize. Like, we're not utilizing the smaller grocery stores, the markets, the mini marts, the Dollar Generals, those types of things to recover food. We're using like Raley's and Walmart only. So we need to see what else is out there, and we need to be able to utilize that so that we can get food to the people.
Schools come to mind.
Schools, yeah. They have excess food sometimes, and we need to be able to get that from them. There's lots of generators out there that provide food that we aren't tapping into right now.
Well, I'm sorry. I appreciate the work you're doing. I know that we're under the edible part, but I've been adamantly against this from day one.
Okay.
And I can't support it. Even though it's grant money, it's a waste of time and effort for something that is there's no consequence to rural counties for the work that's being done for them. So, but the other part of this is, I'm not satisfied that the proposal is the scope of services, because in contracts, if that's being attached to the contract, it's a bit unclear that tasks are now services and everything else that's bound in that is a proposal as an RFP. So I'll leave it at that. I've spoken my piece.
I will make the motion just to get this moved along.
I'll have a question on this.
Yeah. Let's wait and see if we get a second first.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
It didn't look like I'm going to get a second, but go ahead and go for your question.
Question for you, or Joy, we're putting on the spot here.
Yeah,
right,
that's okay.
Day. So, in the payment for this plan, that we're implementing right now, I remember when we voted on it, I think we voted 5-0, I think we had to implement it. It was 3-2, and then we voted 5-0 later on, because it was the policy enforcement.
The ordinance.
But on this,
this is what we're here for, to discuss it. So go ahead.
In regards to, are we spending general fund dollars on this right now at all? Okay.
They gave us the money in advance, and if we don't spend it, we have to give it back. So the money is in our fund right now.
Right. Is there any other use that funding could go towards?
It has to be program specific, or we can't spend it.
Okay. In regards to program specific, does that go towards this feasibility study, or can it go towards other things so we don't have to take from the general fund and use it to implement a state mandated program?
So I'll let you know, Joy Hall, Director of General Services. When we applied for this grant, we applied for $750,000. Part of our application towards it was to do this feasibility study, which was approved through CalRecycle. So that was part of our budget to them, was to do this. They allowed us, they gave us permission, and that's where this is coming from. We would not use any general fund dollars, it's all grant funded.
Right. And for this feasibility study, is it recruiting grants for future implementation of stuff we have to do?
We will use their feasibility study to try and get additional grants if the board or county wants to do it. It really depends on the feasibility study, what they find, though. And we won't know until the study's done what avenue we take from it. So once the study's done and we figure out what what comes of it, then we would know we might need a grant here or we might need a grant here to implement that. But it really depends on what they find.
This also does green waste as well, part of this grant. We can do, yes, we do have the edible food recovery. We also have the organics, but we have the green waste in there too.
Okay.
That we could do things with.
So this could impact other things other than just the, I don't like this related. This 1383 is perfect for a college campus.
Yeah.
It's perfect for us, not perfect for a little rural area.
It's perfect for large cities that do a lot on their own already. It's going to be difficult in rural county, but that's why we need the feasibility study to determine what we can do based on our area and what the haulers that we have can do for us and what the community can do. And that's the point of the feasibility study.
I think the feasibility study also tells us what we can do.
Yes. Yeah, it'll identify the areas that we're going to struggle in or that there's just a hard no. We won't be able to do that.
Right. Since it deals with green waste, I like that aspect of it because we're trying to reduce fires and all those sorts of things. But if it gives us evidence that we can use for lobbying and those things to say this just doesn't work for us, here's the study we're showing to you, this doesn't work. We can tell you it doesn't now, but if you need it with a person with letters behind the name, it helps with that aspect.
Yeah, so we are taking over the operation of the transfer station.
Correct.
How does that play into this?
So we've been discussing internally ways that we can use this grant. One thing that we have been discussing is possibly the air curtain burners.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that we can purchase with this grant as well and would have enough money to do it even after the feasibility study.
So as you know, I've been a proponent of this green waste and going after the burners grant, and it's all grant funded. And we have this little window of opportunity because the state budget's going to kind of affect. Those are the kind of things because I think fire mitigation and all the home hardening things that are coming around is why I would support this.
Supervisor Ogre.
Well, that makes more sense. If this money can go toward an air curtain burner, feasibility study.
We have $750,000. The feasibility study is $157,000. So we would still have $500,000 left over
to buy air curtain burners.
Which the city of Wairika has, which they got through a grant.
Right.
Anyway.
But we're only talking about the 157 here today.
Of the 750.
We know we have an issue here. We know we have problems with the food part of this. We've argued this a lot already. You know my feelings on this already. And I'm not going to go there because I want to keep my blood pressure low. I don't think we need a feasibility study to understand that we have issues with this and where we need to go with it. So I'm having issue with spending money that we don't need to spend to come up with answers that we already know we have. We need to be creative to find answers to be able to deal with this issue. The state's shoving it down our throats. We already know we have the problem. I don't see why we have to spend money to tell them we have issues and to tell them we don't need to follow along with their rules if they're pushing at us. So
I will say that one of the reasons that we selected this company specifically was because they were thinking outside the box. And I think that that is one of the things that we need because we know we have problems. We know that we're having restrictions based on our rural size, based on our communities, based on a lot of different factors. And so I really liked them for their ability to think outside the box and come up with solutions. Maybe their solutions won't be something that we can utilize here. We don't know, though, until we do the study to determine what their solutions could be. And I'm willing to, personally, I would be willing to try it and see where we can come up with it, where we can go from here. Because I don't want to just sit here and say, we have all this money, but we can't do anything with it. We have no solutions. We have all these problems.
How long is this process going to take?
6 months.
So,
we have 26
I sit as the chair to the Environmental Services Joint Powers Authority. 1383 has been front and center for more than years on this. Every county in that room, except those that are more urban, can't, it's not even feasible to begin this process. It doesn't make sense. We can't even recycle here in Siskiyou County because we don't have enough volume. I'm not up for, we're talking about the feasibility study now. It opens the door to creating bureaucracy, and yes, we have a grant in front of us. But once the grant is gone, then it comes back on us. And that's where I'm looking to the future, because I'm not going to be a part of that. We can't attain what the state wants us on 1383, ever. So there's no reason to do a feasibility study. So that I'm leaving it at that. Unless there's another recall for a motion.
I made a motion.
If we didn't get a second. Okay.
If there's no second, then let's move on.
Okay.
Public hearing when the public is speaking.
Public can speak. It's not a hearing, but go ahead.
This is Evan Edgar with Edgar and Associates. He's the person that is in charge of the feasibility study that we were wanting to hire.
Thank you.
Good morning.
My name is Evan Edgar. I'm an engineer. I spent 10 years at the county of Kern and Bakersfield and in Yolo County, and I work with RCRC. John Kennedy is a friend of mine. He's a good guy. And we help support AB 2902, the Woods Bill, to defer collection up to 2037. I have this contract for Humboldt County as well, and I represent a lot of independent haulers for the last 30 years, and from Susanville to Sonora, so I have a good feel about rural California, what you can and can't do. When I say about thinking outside the box, we're looking at spending the $150,000 to check the boxes with Carricycle, do the electronic annual report, a lot of things you gotta do to keep in compliance, because they're still going to enforce it starting 2024. So Edible Food Recovery is the best program. We work in 10 counties right now with Abound, and we actually get infrastructure and get refrigerator units and how to get edible food to hungry people. So that's about a third of the budget. And the money, $500,000, can be spent on edible food recovery infrastructure. Another thing I do with the green waste is up and down the state, I work with the Rangeland Trust. Do carbon farm, do agricultural compost, take the green waste out to the ranches, then Yellow Land and Cattle, Van Vleck Ranch, and we get carbon credits for it. So that's a big program for Healthy Soils Grants, to take your green waste, keep it local, take it out to the ranches. And the third thing I work on is bioenergy. I'm in Calaveras County, and up in Madera County, we build biomass plants, for the forest sector and for the ag sector. So this money can be going into bioenergy for that air curtains or a larger facility. On the way up, I stopped by Oroville. I have a biomass to hydrogen plant there. I'm working in hydrogen. It worked in Oroville, but up here, you just bioenergy going to the grid with the air curtains. So this is it's a mandated study. CalRecycle started enforcing it. We have a practical plan for rural California to focus on edible food, ag compost with the ranchers, and bioenergy. And this money, if you don't spend it, you got to go back, but we'll actually spend about $500,000 beyond hard infrastructure for the community. So I work in rural California a lot. It's a good program. I guess I'm appealing right now since there's not a second on the motion, but it's a worthwhile study. I'll focus. We showed up here today on our own time just to be here available to support this program, because it does work in other counties I lobby and I work for. So thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. So we are at 8A, Smart Workforce Center.
Good morning. My name is Wendy Zanatelli, and I'm the CEO of the Smart Workforce Center.
My name is Carrie Ann Foster, and I'm the Regional Business Services Manager with Smart Workforce Center.
We are your Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act WIO provider for Siskiyou County, and we're going to give you a very high level, very short presentation. We run about 21 grants here in Siskiyou, so when I say high level, we're just going to speed through everything, but we would love to come back and dive into any of the information that you might like additionally. All right, next slide, please. Okay, so the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act is actually a federal law that was enacted in the 70s, and it sets aside billions of dollars for workforce funding that flows down through the Department of Labor, then down at the state here in California, that's the EDD. Then it comes down to local workforce boards. Our workforce board is NorTech, and then it comes down to SMART, which is us, and then we provide it to the community and businesses. So NorTech, so there's 58 counties in California, and there are 45 workforce boards. NorTech is 11 of those counties, so as you can see, they're one of the biggest workforce boards, definitely the biggest by geography, and they are a high-performing workforce board. They focus on rural, and they are unique because they are a joint powers authority, and so every one of those counties has a board of supervisor that is on the governing board to give direction for how this funding should be spent. We're very thankful for Supervisor Valenzuela to be our representative for NorTech. And then NorTech has three service providers. SMART is one of those, and you can see we have those four counties. So SMART has Del Norte, Siskiyou, Shasta, and Trinity. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We've been in business since 1979, and all we have ever done is workforce. So we do it really well. These programs are very, very complex with very strong metrics that we have to meet in order to continue to get our funding. And we consistently overachieve on our metrics, which include things like median wage, making sure that we're putting people into upward mobility careers, making sure that we are continuously supporting them with upskilling. And then also we have to follow our clients for 4 quarters after exit. So we continue to call them for a year and make sure that they're being successful. And if they're not, then we help them to get training and be successful. We infuse about $5 million every year into the counties that we serve. And sometimes that funding increases depending on what special grants we get. Can you go back one? Sorry. So I wanted to say we have 5 brick and mortar America's Job Centers, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. As you can see, we have 2 in Siskiyou, and that's the only county that we actually have 2 in. We started here in 2020, we had 1 in Weed, and we were feeling that we weren't serving North and South County well enough, and so we actually now have 1 in Weed, 1 in Yreka, and we're starting to do pop-up job centers, as you can see. So we've been out to Tule Lake, Happy Camp, and then just this past year, we secured $700,000 in funding, so we will be deploying a mobile unit with Starlink, and we can go out to where the community is. We're really excited about that. Unemployment rates, just as a frame of reference, Siskiyou County pretty much tracks with California. Usually far northern California is a little bit higher than California, but for the most part, you can see that we track. However, the labor force in Siskiyou County has been declining over the years, as you can see there. I don't think it's necessarily a surprise. It's something that we've been kind of watching the trend. We have a lot of people retiring here, as well as making sure that we need to have those on-ramps for our students here to have good jobs, and that's where SMART comes in. So this is kind of what we do in a nutshell. I'm not going to read it to you. On the left-hand side, everybody in this community can come and get free services from SMART. So you can walk into one of our job centers, or you can call us, or you can come online, you can go on social media. And so we have computers for job search. We teach people how to get through filters in order to get their resumes into the hands of people that are hiring. We have local job listings and job boards. We help them with their resume to make sure that it's usable and something that employers will be interested in. We can do mock interviewing, typing tests, and that kind of thing. Then, in addition to that, we have enrolled services. So if we enroll clients, we can pay for their training, which we pay for, going to the College of the Siskiyous. We can pay for supportive services to help them overcome any barriers that they have, transportation, childcare, clothing, interview clothing, all of those kind of things and more. And then we can also do paid on-the-job training or work experience. So if somebody's not interested in going back to college or going to college, we can actually work with our local businesses and offer a training plan in conjunction with them. We come alongside them, and we can offset their wages up to 100% of wages for up to 6 months. And so we pay the business essentially to train their own employee. And then also they can get work opportunity tax credits from us, so that if you hire one of our participants, you can get up to $9,000 in tax credits per participant, every participant that you hire through us. And then this is the business services, which I just kind of touched on. Additionally on that, for businesses, we do EDD fidelity bonding. So we work with justice-involved populations. We have a couple of grants that help people that are coming out of jail. Sometimes employers can't hire them because they're not bondable. So we actually can help the employer work with EDD, and EDD will bond them. And then if the employee is still with that employer at the time that bond ends, then they have to be bondable through the insurance company. So just looking at things and trying to fill gaps different ways in workforce in order to support our local communities. This is just a graphic on the left-hand side. It's kind of really small, but you can see that we have put quite a few people through occupational training through College of the Siskiyous and other places. Sometimes there's gaps. For instance, up here in Siskiyou County, we have a lack of radiation techs, and so we send people down to Yuba College, put them up in housing, and put them through that program, and then bring them back here to fill those types of gaps, as an example. And then on the right-hand side is just a list of different types of occupations that we have put people into. Here's our local employer partners. We're very excited, and this is just Siskiyou. So we have done a really great job. Karen has done a really great job and her team of creating relationships where we can place people with employers, and again, they get those wage offsets that I talked about. One of the other things that we do, which is really cool, national dislocated worker grants. So anytime there's a federally declared national disaster, such as Storm 2023, which was federally declared here in Siskiyou, or fires or other things, we can get millions of dollars in funding, which we have quite a few of these grants right now. And what we do with that is we hire crews, 100% paid for by SMART, on SMART's payroll, and we provide those crews to cities, counties, municipalities. This one is the U.S. Forest Service, and these work crews have gone out and they help to restore trails and do all kinds of really neat things. I know that mudslides was a big issue here, and so working with Caltrans, this is neat because Caltrans or U.S. Forest Service doesn't have to level up their workforce and have to have that ongoing liability. That comes on us, and these are temporary jobs. But also, these individuals may not have had an opportunity to be hired through U.S. Forest Service or Caltrans or anybody else in a traditional manner, but through these grants, they get to prove themselves, and oftentimes then they're picked up and they have amazing careers out of it. And here are our serving locations. So we very strategically co-located with College of the Siskiyous, and you can see our job center there, and then also with Goodwill Job Center up in Wairika, and then we do our pop-ups every month. Since we have done the co-location, our visits have increased dramatically, and we're helping more people than we have in, I don't even know how long here.
And that's fairly recent, the co-location there.
Correct. Yeah. So we were in the old Owens building next to the Merck downtown, and we just weren't pulling, you know, the traffic there. And so, yeah, this happened about a year ago. We are with the Siskiyou Climate Collaborative. Just wanted to real quickly let you know, we are looking for your opinion. This is a planning grant talking about, and we're specifically focused on this for workforce, but there's 6 funded partners through the EDC, and if you can scan that QR code, there's a little survey. We really want to know what the community thinks about this grant and how we can help through workforce. Here is our social handles. So if you want to follow us and see all that we're doing, Karian is our social media queen. She does an amazing job of getting out all the information that we do. And I think that's it. So I don't know if anybody had any questions.
Question? Supervisor Chris?
Yeah, just one question. Thank you. In regards to, are you guys connected with 211?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so. Humble brag about our CEO, Wendy Zanatelli, but awesome. Wendy Zanatelli is the former CEO of United Way and was instrumental in the implementation of NorCal 201.
Awesome.
Yeah. Local celebrity.
That's a good thing to have up here. So
yeah.
So I would just say this, yeah, you know, this has been a long time coming to have you come up. We apologize for not doing it sooner, but I do think it's one of these things that you're not well known in the overall community, except for the people you deal with.
Yeah.
I think co-locating College of Sisters was just spot on. And, you know, I think I mentioned I stopped in there to see how the operation works. Just appreciate all the good work you're doing. Just keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Carrie Ann, nice to see you as always.
It's nice to see you as well, Supervisor Gunn-Lenzler.
Well, thanks for having us.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are at 9A. Council.
Natalie Reed, County Council. As way of background, following unsuccessful efforts to negotiate the exchange of property taxes for a proposed annexation of approximately 3 acres in the unincorporated territory of the county, in the city of Wairega, the county and the city began a statutory dispute resolution process under Revenue and Taxation Code Section 99E1, which involves in sequential steps a third-party fiscal analysis, a mediator, and an arbitrator. At the last board meeting, the board received an update on the dispute resolution process and considered and approved a tax exchange resolution that was shared with the city of Wairega for its consideration. At the last board meeting, the chair also sought consideration about funding of the dispute resolution process, and today information about funding to date and about anticipated future funding if additional dispute resolution steps are reached is being provided. In regards to funding to date, Revenue and Taxation Code Section 99E1A requires the city and county to equally share the costs of a third-party fiscal analysis. The city and county entered into a contract with Richard Berkson for services in the amount of $27,500, and as of the beginning of November, I believe approximately $24,000 in services had been rendered. The third-party fiscal analysis is not yet complete, and it's anticipated that the remainder of the services amount will be reached. However, if the parties do not come to an agreement after review and discussion of the completed final report, then the parties would move on to the mediation stage. The city of Wairega has done some initial outreach to potential mediators that both parties would be open to using. The cost of mediators varies. Some are higher, some are lower. However, one that does have availability in the upcoming months has fees that are on the lower side, and the city estimates that the cost would be approximately $4,650 to be split between the parties. The county probably still needs to do a little follow-up to verify that. If the mediation phase was not successful, then we would go on to arbitrators. We don't have estimates for that at this moment. And I am available for follow-up questions, and we also have Deputy County Administrator Elizabeth Nielsen available as well.
So are we through the first phase with the fiscal analysis yet?
No, we still have, we have an administrative draft report that still needs additional section that relates to the city. And so no, we're not completed with the first stage.
So nothing else can go forward until we've completed that?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Questions from anyone else? Okay, thank you. We're going to recess as the Board of Supervisors and convene as a County Service Area 4. Is this a good time for that? I know I thought we had somebody who was going to come online.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
They're there? Okay. So,
yeah.
So we'll convene as County Service Area 4. We're at item 12A. This is time for public comment. Any public comment in the House? Seeing none, any public comment online?
Showing none online.
None online. So we're at Community Development, General County Fire. Oh wait, you have your person on?
We will see gentlemen of the State Department of Architecture, Fire Life and Safety, Dan DeLatch, should be coming on here. I don't know what his number is. It's 916 number. Let's see. Dan, you can hear us. Raise your hand, speak, please. At any rate, Rick Team, Community Development Director.
Okay.
Well, we're working on getting Dan here. A little bit of background. This is regarding Willow Creek School, basically a project they have for pre-kindergarten expansions. There's been several in the county, one in Hornbrook, one in Delphic, and this particular one, Willow Creek School. With the process of submitting their building plans to the State Department of Architects, there's a requirement to have the local fire authority look at the project and sign off on what they call their Form 810 form, which basically allows them to move forward and process the plans for review. Back on October 15th, their architect reached out to our department, frustrated, trying to find an avenue to get this document signed off so they can move forward with the plans. It's been about a month and a half, and still this hasn't been resolved. The situation basically is that the local fire authority is in state response area for Willow Creek School. They're not in a local fire response area. So situation with the Hornbrook School, the Hornbrook Fire Chief did the review, signed off on that, moved those plans forward. Delphic School, the Montague Fire Chief looked at those, reviewed those, moved that forward. It's just been a kind of a crazy standstill. I'm trying to get this simple review done and this responsible local fire authority to sign off and do the plans forward so Willow Creek School can build their structure. Seemingly simple, but apparently nobody wants to step up and take that responsibility. So
where is that responsibility and what does that require?
Well, representative of the local fire authority, all right. Who that is, who that isn't. So Greg Roth was going to be here to speak on behalf of Cal Fire and himself as the warden as to what, you know, hiccups they have with that. And the county council, Dana Barton, has kind of passed on with Natalie to represent here today with other concerns on sign off with that. So this is kind of fell into our lap. I'm basically the facilitator to try to get this resolved somehow because it's just kind of crazy that this is not moving forward after nearly a month and a half.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Kent Cunningham. I'm the Deputy County Fire Warden here for Siskiyou County under Greg Roth, who had another meeting that he had to attend to. So the problem with this is Willow Creek School falls under unprotected SRA. Siskiyou County, as you are aware, does not have a county fire program, does not have a county fire department. If Siskiyou County had a county fire department, then the unit chief would be the county fire chief. He would have the authority to sign it. We don't have that. Therefore, we have no authority and jurisdiction to sign the plan reviews. We have talked to Dave Shurick, who is the staff chief of Cooperative Fire in Sacramento. We have talked to the State Fire Marshal's Office, and we've also talked to Dana, your county council. They are all in agreement that Cal Fire does not have the authority as the county fire warden to sign those issues. Sign that plan off. Now, what we have established is we have reached out to the state fire marshal's office. They are willing to come up because it is unprotected SRA. It falls under them. They're willing to come up, do the inspection for a small fee, sign off on it, and we can all move forward.
So go ahead, Supervisor Chris.
Sorry, what was that small fee cost again?
I believe I don't have the exact numbers, but I believe Chief Roth said it should be somewhere around $200.
Right. Less than $1,000, in other words, basically.
I would assume so. Yeah. It's a simple plan review to read and sign. Another thing, I mean, this is not a major deal. The problem of it is if we were to turn around and sign it today, review the plan, sign it, something to or happen or anything like that, we have no authority, no legal authority for that signature to be valid in anything, because we are a state agency in protection of wildland.
Okay, and go ahead.
Just have a question for clarification.
Mm-hmm.
So is that concrete? Because the conversation I've had with the state fire marshal is no, they're not going to sign off on it.
Yeah, they don't have a choice. It's under their authority. So it as simple as me making a phone call going, hey, Stephen Allred, I'll see you on Wednesday. You know what I mean? It's seriously that simple.
Okay. Well, that's the problem.
Without having to come before the board.
Well, because we had those conversations, just a little background for the board, right? Trying to be proactive with this. And in fact, I met with Supervisor Kossoff and Supervisor Hout, you know, with the Dolly's office after my conversation with the state fire marshal. They said, no, we're not going to participate with that. Initially, we had a meeting with Cal Fire here in Waterica, and the fire marshal was on board to do that at a cost of $200 an hour. And I said, okay, past the doing business, please do it. And then 3 days later, contacted me and said he ran it up to their council and stated he did not have the authority to do that. So
that's why we're here.
I spoke with Scott Wood.
I haven't been notified that they said they wouldn't do it.
I get all that.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. I get all that. You know, to me, it's just we just had a municipal service review. This is probably one of the things why they say consolidate. It's why San Bernardino has a state or a countywide fire department. I mean, we're paying a fortune to Cal Fire, no offense here, for all the services that are required, yet we can't get a simple sign off on a. We're talking about a school now. All the schools are doing this. This is a check the box type of thing because they're not doing anything out of the ordinary. And so, that, you know, you can sense my frustration here that something that's only going to cost $200 to get it going.
School.
Well,
yeah. I mean, it was to the point where Dolly's office called the state fire marshal and hit roadblocks and were basically told us that legislation has to be changed in order to give the fire marshal authority to do so.
So based on what we're hearing, it sounds as though this can happen this week. When the fire marshal can get here.
Yeah, as soon as I'm done here, I'll make a phone call to him.
Council, we're good there?
No comment.
Mr. Dean, looks like we got problem solved.
Touchdown Raiders.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Cunningham. All right. We'll go to minute approval, item 12C for CSA 4.
I have received no corrections.
Move to approve.
Director Help.
Aye.
Director Valenzuela.
Sure.
Director Chris.
Aye.
Director Ogren.
Aye.
And Director Cobbsett.
Aye. We'll adjourn as County Service Area 4. Let's just go back up to item 10. We'll convene as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. 10A is public comment. Anyone in-house for public comment? Seeing none. Anyone online?
Showing none online.
Consent agenda. It's not going to be pulled, looking for action from the board. I'll move to approve.
Second.
Have a second.
All right. Director Help.
Aye.
Director Valenzuela.
Sure.
Director Chris.
Aye.
Director Ogren.
Aye.
And Director Cobbsett.
Aye. Item 12C. Mr. Parker, good morning.
Good morning. Matt Parker, Natural Resources, and the Sigma Plan Manager for Butte and Scott and Shasta Valley groundwater basins. So It's been a while since I've been in front of you, either myself or our technical consultants, to give you an update on kind of what's happening with Sigma and GSP implementation. So I thought this was a good timing to come in front of you.
Hold on, Mr. Parker.
Do you have some PowerPoints for us?
Yes, I do. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I have one for the public. While Wendy's passing those out, it's been a while since I've been in front of you to give an update. I just have kind of just some high-level things we've been working on to share with you. We don't plan on getting into any real technical updates, but I do have Dr. Fogley on the line in case something comes up from you all. With that, as you recall, the Scott Shasta plans have been approved by DWR. The Butte Valley plan, we're still in waiting mode, but we're still implementing all three of those plans. We currently are working under or operating under the DWR implementation grant. We have available a little over $3 million per basin to work with, and so we've been doing quite a bit of work over the past few years to just comply with our groundwater plans and just improve our understanding of groundwater hydrology in the three basins. This slide here. Most of you have seen these next three slides. We shared these in front of the State Water Board a few months ago. We shared these with our groundwater committees here last week or the week before. This is showing since 2019, which is essentially when we really started doing work under grants, we've been able to install, this is for Scott Valley, the green is newer monitoring locations, the orange or brown or tan dots are previous monitoring locations. And so since 2019 in Scott Valley, we've installed 41 wells for elevation data, temperature data. We've installed a couple of flow stations and some rain stations and collected isotope samples, which essentially helps us track kind of water movement or creates a baseline to do that. Next slide.
Can we just hold on just a second?
Yeah, you betcha.
41 seems like a significant number. Those are new wells. Those are just monitoring
wells? Yeah, let me clarify. Yeah, they're not new wells. They're essentially we've installed equipment in existing wells with continuous equipment. Yeah.
So do we know collectively what's the end goal? Every one of them or 50% of the wells or to get the data that we need to make decisions?
Yeah, that's a good question. We still struggle, I wouldn't say struggle, because of the limited amount of information about actual wells out on the ground. In all three of our basins, we basically work off of the well completion reports that DWR has and just, field data that we've done and sort of have an idea of how many wells are actually out there. From a percentage standpoint, we could probably work that up roughly for all three of our valleys, but I would say, when you talk to the technical folks from a grid aspect, Scott Valley is very well covered in terms of the amount of data we have now to understand the basin. The next map is Shasta Valley, 29 additional wells we've added to. We also have the DWR TSS well in Gazelle. It's a pretty sophisticated monitoring location paid for by DWR. That's at the county's Gazelle pit. That's been operational for a couple of years. And next slide for Butte Valley. Again, 18 wells. We've also got a DWR TSS well at the county airport that's been operational for about a year now. Next slide. Butte Valley specifically, again, we had to resubmit the GSP. It was determined incomplete. Essentially, one of the big topics was, we needed to better adjust and refine our water budget. And DWR I wouldn't say requested, but they hinted to us that they would like to see us develop well mitigation and well allocation programs. Dew Valley is kind of a closed basin in that there's not water that runs through the system. And so, you know, our current hydrographs of the valley do show some decline in water levels in certain areas. And DWR's concern was impacts to drinking water, shallow residential wells, and well outages in general. So we are starting the process to create possibly well, what we call well mitigation programs, which is a backstop in case we have an excess of well outages, and then also, you know, worst case scenario, an allocation program in the valley. We're just understanding what these look like around the state. We've proposed these topics to the Groundwater Committee in Dew Valley. You know, obviously there's concern and hesitancy, but this isn't something that's going to develop this year and start being implemented right away. It's something we just sort of have to have in our back pocket for worst case scenarios. As far as the GSP, we've been told by DWR we're supposed to hear back by the end of the year. We're looking at it, you know, a few weeks before the end of the year, and no word yet, but, you know, we're optimistic that they're going to approve the resubmitted plan. So next topic, and I have a few slides on this. I know recharge is an important topic to the board. Earlier this year, we submitted, or through our committees and worked with some folks out on the ground, we submitted an application, the GSA did, for Grenada Irrigation District for a 180-day temporary permit for a water right to basically divert for recharge. The permit application would allow it be for this current winter year, so December 1st, if we had the permit, we could be possibly diverting for recharge, you know, as of yesterday or the day before. Through March 31st of this next year. It's a 90-20 approach, which I won't get into detail, but we had to do a water availability analysis. We had to look at flows, flow rates, and we can only divert when flows exceed 90 percentile, and we can divert no more than 20% of the available flow, which when we worked it all out, the max between the flow rate and then what GID could actually take in their canals, about 40 CFS. This would be flood irrigated on pasture. And the primary beneficial use is for recharge for residential wells in the Grenada area. You know, through reports and word of mouth, we know of dry wells or lower producing residential wells in the area. It's been a concern. We feel, and on a greater level, we feel between flood irrigation from GID as well as the China Ditch Company that irrigates in Gazelle, those are beneficial. That's a beneficial use of water for residents as well through recharge. And because of drought and some regulation occurring in the last 5 to 10 years, the amount of water being able to divert from flood irrigation has dropped. And I think along with drought has led to a possible increase in residential well outages or you know, production loss and so forth. And so we have this application in the works for the permit to recharge in Grenada, but overall we want to look at the benefits from flood irrigation in the Grenada area, the Gazelle area, and go from there. As you saw with the monitoring map I showed a little bit ago, we've added monitoring points in these locations to really look at the effects from flood irrigation in this area. This project is funded through our DWR grant. It's about $5,800 in fees to the State Water Board, so hopefully we'll be able to get some water out on the ground. Next slide. This is just a hydrograph there at the bottom that shows one well sort of southwest of the town of Grenada. This is the shallow well. You can see the obvious spikes in that well from when flood irrigation is occurring. I don't want to belabor it. You have the graph in front of you. You can look at it in more detail. The next slide. you know, we have to have an existing diversion, of course, fish screen requirement. The blue shaded areas are the parcels that we may use as our recharge location. Next slide. This is kind of a busy graph, but it basically shows since, you know, on record at the Wairega stream gauge, these would be the number of days we could potentially divert based on our water availability analysis. So the past few years, because of drought, we wouldn't be able to divert at all. Then I think that's roughly 2016, you know, there's almost 40 days where we can divert for recharge. So this just kind of helps, you know, look at how much we can actually divert or when we can divert based on the availability. The next steps in this process, we're waiting feedback from the State Water Board on any corrections or further information they need to approve the permit. Based on the review, also the review of a comment letter they received from Fish and Wildlife on biological monitoring requirements, and then satisfying maybe any concerns from a protest letter submitted. So next slide. Switching gears just in general with our GSP work, concern we hear a lot of in the Scott Shasta groups is the State Water Board's flow setting processes that are both occurring now and into the future, is how that's all going to be accounted for, impacted, or impacts the GSP and just, you know, water use in general. You all have heard that before, but it's something we're trying to track and just further be involved in. We have fee study work coming up. This will all fall under our grant work. You know, you all have said that fees are unfortunately inevitable to pay for this. We're going to keep working on grants as long as we can. The current implementation grant runs out March 2026, so we need to we're starting to do preliminary work on developing a fee study and then implementing having something for you, something in front of you to sort of kick back your feedback on. We put together an ad hoc, joint ad hoc committee between our three basins to do some question and answer with the consultant that would actually provide the fee study so they can get an understanding of what would be palatable in a sense by the stakeholders on the ground where the fees would actually get implemented. But again, this is just preliminary work that we'll start working on. This, you know, wouldn't go in front of the board for an actual deliberation until I would say late 2025. I don't have listed on here, but we're also under our grant going to do an economic analysis regarding impacts from SGMA, you know, water allocation, that sort of thing, and what it would have it do to economies in the three basins. Other projects occurring, you all know SVID, Scott Valley Irrigation District, is doing a recharge in Scott Valley. We have work under that under the Fish and Wildlife grant that we have and the DWR grant. And there's been a lot of good work coming out of this year ago's diversion. So we're going to have a more sophisticated, in-depth update for you all in January that I think you all will really appreciate. Other projects under the grant we're working on is working to develop irrigation efficiency programs or projects. And then tracking all, you know, sort of non-SGMA related projects that other entities are leading and how it relates. Next slide. So to kind of put a cap on all this, we're continuing to work on developing a public access webpage where folks can, it's GIS, folks can bring up this webpage and look at data. It's all publicly available. Folks can look at it now, but we're continuing to add to that. Continuing to do isotope sampling. We think that's an important part in understanding our hydrology. Upland management, you know, we're not upland management focused people, but this is an important important aspect for Sigma implementation in terms of what's coming into the basin. So, you know, we're doing our best to work with or coordinate with other entities, better coordinate with these other entities like Forest Service and so forth to help them monitor and collect data regarding water contributions from better upland management. So we'll continue to kind of harp on that. You know, that's not our or the GSA board's authority, but it's an obvious important aspect for water in these three basins, and we'll continue to work on that. We have not listed is we have our annual reports due required by DWR April 1st of each year. Our team is working hard on those. And then we just want to better improve and utilize our advisory committees for stakeholder outreach and just, you know, what needs to be done to better this process. And then, you know, lastly, are there projects of importance to you all as board members that you need to hear more about, that maybe hear from your committee or your stakeholders, you know, that you want to hear more about? And, you know, lastly, I do encourage you all to attend an advisory committee meeting. There's a lot of good discussion that goes on there. You know, we have three-hour meetings, and, I mean, we run out of time to get through all our subjects. And so, you know, I had 15 minutes to try to bring you up to speed on three basins. There's a lot of good discussion that occurs in those committees. You know, I hear feedback from the committee members themselves. They would love to see a board member be there, just listen, but also, you know, weigh in some regards on, you know, how does this project or action, you know, hit home with you all. And I'd maybe encourage you to go to a committee meeting outside of sort of your area. So, but there's a lot of good work that goes on there that we don't have the time to dive into today. So with that, questions, comments?
I just on the advisory committees, I purposely don't go because I don't want to influence that.
Yeah.
Or have the, I guess, the public perception be that we're somehow influencing how those meetings go as well. And so that's why I'm not there. It's not that I don't support them. Yeah. Obviously, I do, but I like it to be without somebody looking over their shoulder.
Yeah.
If you get my drift.
No, I do get your drift. And I think, you know, this is just my opinion. I think the committees wouldn't see it that way. I think they would, like I said, because there's just so much information you get into, it's hard for us to just regurgitate it back to you. You know, you got a million other subjects going on this day. But if you come to a committee meeting and attend, I think you can hear a lot of information and discussion.
Supervisor Open?
I've been to a couple of those meetings, and they really do appreciate us being there. And it is amazing how different those basins are and how much the conversation is different and the input is different and how brilliant those people are. It's really enlightening to go, and I love going to those meetings when they fit in.
Supervisor Howe?
Yeah, I'm actually splitting the baby between COPSEF and Oakland. Mm-hmm. I've been to some of the meetings, but I deliberately don't say anything. I'll sit in the back. Mm-hmm. I'll probably do the same thing. I'll go to the meetings, Butte Valley or Shasta, because I don't want to advise my advisors on how to advise me on subjects. So, we deliberately don't want to be in the minutes because we don't say anything. A couple of questions for the isotope. Are you going into? Are we going to go to, let's say, like Grass Lake or like an antelope sink or something like that, and get isotope from that area and just see where maybe it ends up?
That is basically what we're trying to get after. From I know very little about this, and even some of our technical folks are trying to better understand that. It all depends. The type of isotope you sample for is there's a cost variance. But then you get, you know, depends on what kind of information you get. And so, samples from those kind of locations, you know, have been asked, like, we need samples from this place and this place, you know, to help paint the map. And so I think we're slowly kind of building up as we get more samples and better understand what the chemistry looks like. You know, it can lead us to go here or this way and all that. And so I think when we get a little more information, it would be a really cool update for you all to hear about. But we're just scratching the surface on that. But basically your question is what we're trying to get to.
Awesome. I've heard coffee table theories of where it is, and it depends on who you're talking with and
yep.
what assumptions people have in their mind.
Well, and it, you know, you bring, it's we hear the same coffee shop theories too from the committees, and that's why we have them on the committee, is because they hear that, and you know, they're on the ground, they see this occurring, they can point the technical folks in a direction. Well, I really think you should go here. You know, the folks talk about it, and it's truly that coffee shop back of the envelope stuff really helps point the committees in.
There's a lot of wisdom there, actually. Yeah.
Yep.
Do you have identified water bodies that you're testing yet, or?
Right now, it's mainly just been samples directly from wells.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know for this would benefit the Two Lake Basin as well. There's interest in Medicine Lake,
mm-hmm.
where that water goes to.
Yeah.
That would be for Pete Valley of Two Lake. And then Grass Lake, Antelope Sink.
No, that's good ideas. And again, you know, there's also access permissions we need to work on. And, you know, private landowners, there's, if they're willing to let you on, they're easy. But working with state federal agencies, sometimes, you know, that, you know, you got to go through encroachment permits and that sort of thing to get on there. But, yeah, that's good
points. Just saying, you go out fishing Medicine Lake and actually take a
there you go.
Like
there you go.
And in regards to the juniper tree actions, that's beautiful. I know the North Coast has funded the project around Lake Shastina for juniper tree removal. And then Coffee Table Theory, Antelope Sink, and Beet Creek had increased flows this last year and increased water volumes. Coincidentally, there was a major fire on that upland water. I don't want to eliminate all the upland management, but thinning it down, there was a noticeable difference there.
It's stuff we're trying to get on top of. You know, with the Shelley Fire in Scott Valley, our team was able to get out and get some flow stations involved and works with some other entities as well to try to collect data based on the runoff from that fire. So,
thank you. Mm-hmm. Supervisor Powell?
Just a couple things going forward. You just mentioned one of them. You know, interested in what kind of progress we're making on the flow gauges and the population. In Scott Valley. Really interested in the South Fork of the Scott, French Creek, and the upper tributaries, Sugar Creek, from the major tributaries. When we were out on the water tour a couple weeks ago, I pointed out to Laura a new pivot going in. And that pivot is going in on top of what's historically been a very large irrigated pasture piece. And can she, and I know what the well is that's going to supply that, which is historically just kind of been used for livestock water. I guess what I'm interested in is being able to pinpoint that point in time and whether or not that change in irrigation on that grazing land has an effect on our groundwater.
So it's switching from flood to groundwater?
Yeah, because the pivot's not going to allow groundwater recharge like the flood did. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a direct result of the curtailments on the Parker Ditch from the department. So I'm very concerned about that. That has been a historic groundwater recharge for better than 100 years in the Scott.
I think if we have monitoring in that location, we should be able to kind of just better understand that. The model in Scott especially is pretty dialed in to be able to sort of look at that long term.
Yeah, you have a monitoring well real close there, but I don't think everything that's closer to the river from that.
I see. Okay.
So we might want to look at that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got that noted. I do know there's, you know, the committees as well as some other entities are there's funding out there to put more stream gauges in both the valleys. So I think a lot of the technical folks and stakeholders are putting their heads together on where the best locations are, and everybody has numerous ideas, and so just coming to agreements.
Yeah. And then scientists are famous for collecting data.
But they don't use it. that's been a 45-year criticism of mine. What I would really like to see, Matt, is the end of every year, I'd like to see an assessment of the data. You know, pointing out things like did the curtailments increase or decrease groundwater monitoring levels? I see an awful lot of pivots now converting in the valley from the typical pivot now to the low nozzle, low elevation nozzle piece, which is even more efficient. And what effect is that having on groundwater? What effect is changing crops having on groundwater? Because in order for us to get out of this mess that we're in with constantly being challenged that we're using too much water, we need to be able to have these reports to show that we're making progress. And the data itself doesn't do that. It takes some interpretation.
Yeah, that's, we hear those same comments from committee members and stakeholders too. And, you know, our annual reports, we don't necessarily cover that much detail, but I think we're trying to get to reports like that. We get asked to have that, you know, on the ground, what on the ground actions are impacting just, you know, hydrology in general, but also the GSP and other actions. And so tying all that together is something we're slowly trying to
I think we're getting enough saturation of monitoring wells, and Scott, that we should be able to make those conclusions at this point. Which would help a great deal, you know, and from a regulatory standpoint.
Sure, absolutely.
Thanks.
Supervisor Balance Vale.
Do we have any monitoring wells close to in Chest Valley, close to where the marijuana grows are?
And are
we doing any testing on that front? You know, it wasn't too long ago we got the skies falling, the chemicals that are being used. To me, that would have a direct impact if their water's going bad, if you will.
We are starting to get samples in the Shasta in general for just water quality, and we're testing for kind of a multitude of product concerns, you know, just in general, fertilizers, pesticides, that sort of thing, just so we can get a baseline out of that, because we really don't have anything. So we're starting there, kind of trying to cover, you know, a wide area in the valley, just for in general. You know, looking at the map, I mean, I guess there's monitoring wells. You know, Shasta is so complicated because of the volcanic and stuff, so we may have a location that looks great, but it may not be tied to anything. And so I think we're just slowly trying to better understand hydrology in general out there and where to focus.
I was just curious on that because, you know, again, what too long will we have, to, you know. With some of the chemicals that are being used, the illegal chemicals. You know, that goes in the groundwater, and, you know, groundwater is connected, so, you know, it gets in there. It could upset the apple cart if it's that bad.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, Sigma requires the GS, you know, in the groundwater plans to, you know, oversee water quality. And so that's a tough one to grapple with. You know, my committees bring that subject up all the time, and I, you know, I kind of tell them it's out of my hands just because it's under other departments right now with enforcement and aspects. And so I know it's a very complicated subject that I hear from the committees, and it stinks because I don't have a great answer for them on what we can do, and it's expensive. And, you know, we're kind of guessing on where to go. So.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. How are we doing with, I guess, the relationship with... our Sigma requirements, authority, and the water board?
I think that's something we're just going to continue to coordinate with state board staff and their board members on, is how the Sigma effort plays a role in that decision moving forward, whether it's, you know, the short term, whether to extend the EREG another year or create a kind of an interim measure and then, you know, eventually in the long-term measure. I think we're still trying to develop that, you know, relationship. And, you know, we're still pushing on them that they need to use our signs because, you know, you can see the monitoring that we've added. Nobody else has done that.
Mm-hmm.
We have the models that are usable. They don't. So I think we'll just continue to push on board staff and the board members and say we need to be at the table. We need to be in the room when these science discussions are being had.
And now all five have been here on a tour?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the presentation.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Wendy, you need to...
Can we get through the minutes for the next couple and then take a break?
Okay.
Thank you.
So you want me to go through the different entities?
Yeah, we have, Siskiyou Power
so,
and in-home.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're at 10D minute approval for Water Conservation District. Both?
Yes, there's two.
Yeah,
two.
So this for the motions for both.
Help
and
Ogren, correct? Okay. Director Help? Aye. Director Valenzuela?
Sure.
Director Chris?
All in, aye.
Director Ogren and Director Copsa?
Aye. We'll adjourn as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. We'll convene as the Siskiyou Power Authority. This is a time for public comment. Anyone in-house? Seeing none. Anyone online?
Showing none online.
None online. Minute approval.
So moved to approve.
I have a motion.
Second.
Okay. Director Help?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Sure.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Copsa?
Aye. We'll adjourn to Siskiyou County Power Authority, and we will convene as the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority, item 13A. This is a time for public comment. Anyone in-house? Seeing none. Online?
Showing none online.
Minute approval 13B for October 15 and 12.
Would you approve?
Both?
Yep.
Okay.
Second.
Okay.
All right. Director Help?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Yep.
Director Chris?
Aye.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Copsa?
Aye. We'll adjourn as the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors. And you want to take five now?
Yeah, if we could, and then
we'll
come right back.